Right, I've called tonight's talk Learning to Breathe. It had to happen sooner or later. Yep, it's definitely called Learning to Breathe. We take life, human beings in general, we take life for granted. We always seem to be overstepping life, always trying to head into tomorrow, into the future. The Buddha talks about there being three kinds of craving, doesn't he? A craving for sensual pleasures, a craving for becoming, wanting to either want self to be different, or wanting the world to be a different place, or a craving for non-becoming, wanting to keep life the same or stop it from changing. So we're always overstepping the moment, always seeking something else, something other, which is a great shame, because the secret of happiness, the secret of peace of mind, is to be located right here and now. There's nothing missing in life. Life is truly perfect as it is. It's got magic and mystery and wonder. And yet so much of the time we mistake it. We don't see it. We're always looking for something else. The Buddha's teaching is designed to help us find freedom, true freedom. Freedom from that restless seeking and searching, that restless consuming, always wanting life to be different, and the continual disappointment that comes with that. As I always say, when after I've said something like that, of course life has its pleasure, of course life has its fun. It most certainly does. I'm sure everyone has had fun in life at some point. But it didn't last though, did it? And therein lies the problem. The Buddha maintained that the one way to find that freedom was through mindfulness. Mindfulness, he said, was the one way. Now mindfulness is like a window. It's something that you have to create, but you create a window of opportunity, if you like, or a window of awareness. And the way you do it is by consciously restraining that craving. So it's a conscious decision not to crave for life to be different. And we call it meditation, we call it mindfulness. So it's a deliberate decision to remain in the moment and restrain the thoughts, the emotions, and what have you that are trying to force us into another place. Thereby, you can actually observe and look at what is actually taking place in your experience right now. And you do it in order to come to the direct personal understanding of what it is that people say about this moment being perfect, about it being this wonderful, evolving mystery. Sometimes I get a little bit, this is going off the beaten track, but I do get a little bit when I read things where people say, oh, you've got to be in the here and now. This is where it is. That's where you've got to be. And I said, well, now, are they talking from direct personal experience? Or is it something that they've read in a book? Or they've heard a teacher say? And they are, in a sense, claiming that knowledge to be their own and then just simply reproducing it. What we want is a kind of knowledge where you know from your own personal direct experience what's what, just to try and ascertain the difference. Just consider this moment, for instance. I'm standing here. Do you know how many muscles are required to be operative, all in unison, all coordinated perfectly, for me not to just fall on the floor like a sack of potatoes? No, neither do I, but I've heard it's a lot. Your adrenal glands. What are they? Does anybody know how their adrenal glands work? But they're working, yeah? There's nobody sitting there going, oh, my adrenal glands, oh my God, I hope they start working in a moment. The human body is in Buddhism, what we call anatta, non-self. It operates with or without your permission. It operates perfectly well when you're asleep. Your adrenal glands are working perfectly at the moment, but you have not the faintest idea how it's happening at all. One of the things we find when we start to meditate is, now the scientists, the medical people can write these wonderful books on anatomy, and they're truly wonderful books, and that they can explain the whole thing. There's a difference between coming to understand how the human body works through that and the direct experience of it actually operating all by itself that you get through developing mindfulness. It's that kind of knowledge that we want. It's a direct experience that we want. That ultimately is what will set us free. Now, the way we do it is by, we create this window of opportunity, this opportunity to be aware and look deeply and scrutinize and investigate our experience. The Buddha came up with a wonderful method called Anapanasati, which is mindfulness of breathing, hence the title of tonight's talk. The breath is a most wondrous process. Again, it's something that we do take for granted. We only tend to miss it when it's not there. It, of course, is life-sustaining. In itself, the observation of the breathing process will show us incredible things about the way in which life actually works. Watching the breath will develop amazing mental qualities. Qualities, I have to point out, that you don't currently possess. When I say you don't currently possess, until you start deliberately developing these qualities, you may or may not have these qualities to certain degrees. But through the practice of mindfulness of breathing, you actually develop these mental qualities greatly. For instance, focus, develop the capacity for deep concentration, balance of mind, equanimity, interest. You become very much more interested, not just in meditation, but all aspects of life. You learn how to apply the mind in very efficient ways. There are incredible benefits through developing mindfulness of breathing. The breath is a very suitable object for developing mindfulness, which is why the Buddha chose it. It's always freely available. You don't have to carry it around in your pocket. You're not going to forget them like your glasses. The breath's always there. Breath also has observing the breath is also very, very good because, as you already know, observing the breath does help you calm down. So if you're anxious, then people will always recommend you just take a few deep breaths and watch your breathing. So it has this capacity to ground us, to earth us, to bring us back to a saner place at times. Now here, there are different ways you can watch the breath. Some people, for instance, teach watching the whole of the breath coming from the diaphragm all the way up through the lungs, up the throat, up through and out the nose, and then all the way back in again. Other people suggest just observing the... Oh, these come in handy, don't they? Observing the breath as it enters and leaves the nostrils. What we teach here is the observation of what essentially is the movement of the abdomen that occurs due to the breathing process, which I will mention again a little bit later. And one of the benefits of that is that it's the equivalent of deep breathing, isn't it? I always say that deep breathing is a very, very healthy thing to do rather than shallow breathing up here, you learn to breathe from lower down. So it has those benefits, but they're really side benefits. One thing, yes. When I was playing with meditation, before I really got serious, I was practicing meditation, trying to practice mindfulness, but I always wondered whether I was really following the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path is the way to the cessation of suffering, after all, and I was always pondering on this. I was a bit concerned that I wasn't. So in the end, that prompted me in the end to become a monk here. And I was a monk here for 9 years, just to kind of make sure that I was. But I needn't have worried, actually, although being a monk was the very best thing I could have possibly chosen. Because anyone who practices mindfulness of breathing is fulfilling all 8 steps in the Noble Eightfold Path. If they're properly reflective, and if they're willing to adapt their approach based on the evidence of their experience, then as time goes on, you'll become more and more in line with the Noble Eightfold Path through practicing mindfulness of breathing. Let me try to explain why that is in a little bit more depth. The Noble Eightfold Path consists of 8 elements, which can be reduced into the 3 trainings. So we have the training in wisdom, which is right view and right aspiration. We have the training in ethics, which is right action, right speech, and right livelihood. I like to call it right lifestyle, if that's not too cheeky. And then we have training in samadhi, or concentration, which is right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration itself. Clearly we can see that the training in samadhi, in mind control, is very definitely part of mindfulness of breathing. But ethics also is an integral part of mindfulness of breathing. And this is what I mean by learning to adapt. If you find, when you practice mindfulness of breathing, that your mind is obsessed with things that you said at work that you wish you hadn't, then that suggests that there needs to be some kind of reappraisal, some kind of adaption, a way of adapting so that you no longer are troubled by those thoughts when you try to practice mindfulness of breathing. Do you see? So your behaviour does influence your meditation. So as time goes on, you begin to see these things, and so you adapt your ethical behaviour to something that suits your overall aspiration. I hope that makes sense, because it is an important part of the training. So things like food and drink, socialising, dwelling, where and when you practice, and the kind of atmosphere you create when you practice, for your practice, all has an impact when you practice mindfulness of breathing. So what is mindfulness of breathing? How do you practice it? In the sutta where the Buddha explains mindfulness of breathing, he said this: "Now monks, a monk in this dhamma and discipline," so that's ethical discipline, "having gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty house," that means getting one's dwelling suitable, I'm getting into this, aren't I? "Getting to a dwelling, having a dwelling which is suitable for the practice of meditation. He sits down cross-legged," well, for us that's sitting in a chair, because most of us are getting on a bit, aren't we, and we're finding it a bit of a struggle to sit cross-legged, "with body erect," and that, of course, is about the posture. Meditation posture is very important. One wants a straight spine, one doesn't want it drooping, because apart from anything else, when you start to meditate and you're observing the breath, it interferes with the flow of the breathing. So you want to be, your rib cage to be up a bit, but you don't want it to be forced, but you want to be you want to be straight. Inevitably, when we're sitting in meditation, the head does tend to drop a little bit, but that's fine. But as long as the spine is erect but not forced, that is primarily the most. Well, that's really the most important thing with the posture. And then, so having done all that, he then firmly establishes mindfulness in front of him. And so, before attending to the breath, because it's only then that he mindfully breathes in, mindfully breathes out. So before observing the breath, we first must establish mindfulness. And it's very important. Many people just rush in. Yeah, all right, I've got half an hour. I've got to make every moment count. And they just zoom straight into watching the breath. And within a few moments, they're either very tense or deeply asleep. It's usually one or the other. If you have a half an hour session, if you have an hour session, it pays to take your time. It pays to gradually go into the meditation by first establishing a general mindfulness. What can I hear? What can I sense in my body? What's going to happen next? What's going to come up next? The mind's going to be agitated. Maybe you're meditating after work. There's going to be lots of thoughts about work. The mind wants to throw up all these thoughts to get rid of them. So doesn't it make sense just to stay alert, stay conscious, but keep the awareness fairly general and allow the mind to settle, allow the body to become more peaceful and more settled. And then when you feel ready, you feel balanced, you feel alert, then attend to the rising and the falling of the breath. The breath itself, I did write down that it's our normal breath. But then what is normal breath? There's no such thing as normal breath. There's no such thing as normal breath. Breath is always changing. This is one of the things that you come to see fairly quickly when you start practicing mindfulness of breathing. Your breathing one moment is not the same as your breathing the next moment. One moment it's coarse, it's fast, heart's beating quite a lot. A few moments later, you can barely detect the breath because it's so light. So the body is settled, so it doesn't need so much blood going around the system quite so quickly. So the breathing just becomes shallower naturally. Then you start thinking about something, maybe a hindrance pops up, and suddenly the heartbeat's going a little bit quicker, and the breath's changed again. Other times you cannot detect the breath at all, and some people think they died. But if you have the thought, just to bear that in mind, if you have the thought that you've died, then you're not dead, are you? Okay. There are obstacles to this process. And we all know, everyone knows, that just watching the breath, it's not that easy. Of course, there are lots and lots of different things that interfere with that simple process of just observing the breath. I could go through a lengthy list of what all these obstacles are. Hindrances, five hindrances, wrong effort, goal orientation, to name but a few. A lot of the problems are resolved if we get the basic attitude towards mindfulness of breathing right. The right attitude to take towards mindfulness of breathing is to be totally interested in the breathing. Meaning that you're not at all interested at the time you are meditating, at the time you're being mindful, you're not at least bit interested in what watching the breathing will give you. And that is, you have to be very, very clear about that. That if you are forever concerned about whether you're getting calm, or whether insights are on the horizon, or whether you're doing it properly, whether you're not doing it properly, the mind will never calm. You will never reach that point of rest, that point of contentment, that does and will come with mindfulness of breathing. Imagine that you're sitting on your sofa at home with your loved one, having a bit of a snuggle, watching a film on TV. And your loved one starts going, "Am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? Am I watching this film correctly?" You mad person, what on earth are you going on about? It'd be a crazy thing to do. But that's what we do in the meditation, isn't it? We go, "Am I doing it right?" And you don't sit down to watch a movie in order to be sitting down watching a movie. You do it to get engrossed in the movie, so to the point where you forget that you're even watching a movie, if it's a good film. Do you see the difference? And so with watching the breath, it's taking total interest in the breath itself, to the exclusion of everything, to the point where there is no perception that you're meditating, because the interest is totally on the breathing. Now, that's not particularly easy, and for some people it takes them a very long time to learn that particular lesson. One way of doing it, and one way that I found to be very, very useful indeed, and the way that the Buddha taught, is by firstly, when you begin to watch the breathing process, is to estimate the length of the breath. Is it a long breath? Is it a short breath? Is it a long in-breath? Is it a long out-breath? Is it a short in-breath? Is it a short out-breath? Now, I know what you're going to ask me. How do I know what a long breath is and what a short breath is? Well, it is just relative to you. It's relative to a meditation. If you say you begin a meditation and you've run up the hill to get here on time and you're a little out of breath and you sit down and the heart's pumping, then it's going quite quickly and you can sort of say, all right, okay. And then as it begins to settle down, perhaps it gets a bit longer. And you go, all right, okay, so that's a slightly longer breath than the last breath. And then as the body really starts to calm down, the heartbeat slows, the breath becomes shorter because it doesn't have to exert itself so much. So it just rests, a very small thing. And you go, all right, well, that's a short breath then. And it can become more complex where you go, well, that's a teeny-weeny breath. That's an almost not there breath at all. To that's an enormous deep breath I just did there. And then you can also begin to detect other aspects of the breathing. Sometimes it's coarse, sometimes it's fine, sometimes it's jagged, sometimes it's very calm, sometimes it's quite warm, sometimes it's quite cold. Sometimes it doesn't feel like an up and down motion, it feels like an in and out motion. Sometimes it doesn't feel like an in and out motion, it feels like an expansion and a contraction. Normally when there's an inhalation, it feels like everything's moving up. But not that time. That time it felt like there were muscles that were actually moving down. Do you get the idea? You're just so immersed in observing the breathing process that you forget about everything else. Yay. As that process, just to recap there, because I was talking about the fact that we have these obstacles. If you're taking real interest in the breathing process, then when the thoughts arise, they're not a problem at all. Have you ever had that thing where you're working on a project that you really don't want to do, and it's really... and you just want to get rid of it, and then someone comes up to ask you a question and you just snatch their heads off. You're just leave me alone, because you want to get rid of this problem. When you're really enjoying something that you're doing and someone interrupts you, you go, oh, hi, yeah, what's up, because all you're going to do is just go back to what you were doing. And so through taking an interest in the breathing, On the psychological level, you get lovely a sense of well-being, lovely sense of happiness that seems to come out of the breath, that area of the abdomen, just seems to just take over. You get pleasurable interest, you get rapture. One of the raptures that arises is what's called transporting rapture, where you feel like you're just going up and up and up in the air, or conversely going down, 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 down. Really delightful, pleasant experience. Also, physiologically, because the breath is so light, the body isn't required to do anything else. Mindfulness of breathing is a very positive mental activity, and it consequently has an effect on the physiology as well, and there's this real sense of well-being physically as well. So by taking interest in the breathing, you find that it's easier, so much easier, to let go of unwanted thoughts. You're not concerned about the person breathing deeply next to you or anything like that. You just don't care. And all you do, if you do get distracted, you just go, oh, I wonder what the breath's up to. And you just go back to that and carry on. Not all in one go, I understand that. Now, we really are in the realm here of, remember what I was saying about the window, we're looking very, very deeply into the breathing process, which is happening now. It's not happening tomorrow, it's not happening yesterday, it's happening right now. And that process begins to show us the true workings of non-self. Anybody who concentrates begins to detect non-self. In the body, we detect it in the body, we begin to actually see how the breathing process is actually a whole bunch of different muscles and tissues all acting in this perfect coordination in unison in order to bring in the nutrients that the heart needs to turn into, get into the blood. I'm not great on all this subject, but you know this sort of thing. You start to see it in real time. You actually start to see the magic and the wonder and the mystery of the human body. Some people get so concentrated that they are able to distinguish different parts of the body in real time. I know that at one stage when I was practicing mindfulness of body, I became acutely aware of my skeleton. Really, it's so light and yet so durable. It's really quite an astonishing thing to start to become aware of. And just the incredible ways it moves. And it needs the muscles to be there. And you start to see the muscles working, and it's really quite sensational. All through just paying attention to what's going on, to the exclusion of everything else. So we begin to see how everything's put together. We begin to see how it all operates of and by itself, and it really doesn't require us in order to fulfil its task. Now, when we get into that level of mindfulness, the meditator has a choice to make. Do they go down the route of continuing to develop that concentration, which we call samatha practice, or do they go down the route of developing insight, which we call vipassana meditation? The Buddha recommended both, because both result in freedom. The freedom that comes with samatha is calm, restful freedom from craving for life to be different than it is. Blissful, peaceful, deeply alluring, a joy to experience. So one drawback, it's temporary. It won't last. The effects might last for a little while after you meditated, but in order to get those effects back, you have to keep working with the mindfulness. That's one kind of freedom. The other freedom is through insight, and that is permanent freedom, ultimately. Because through looking, through developing wisdom into the true nature of ultimate reality, of seeing deeply, closely, observing the three marks of transience, unsatisfactoriness or the ungraspable nature of existence, and non-self, in all possible experiences. You come to see how the mind weaves together experience, how absolutely all of it occurs without any owner, any controller, any self at all. And it is that understanding, it's that knowledge, which really is not worldly knowledge at all, it is higher knowledge. It's that that leads to dispassion, to a turning away of the mind from worldly things, from attachment to worldly things, from the desire to own worldly things. You let go of the world completely. And in that moment, you see what has always been there, which is right here, right now, but has always been hidden. It's been hidden by the craving. It's been hidden by always wanting to be somewhere else, always wanting to be doing something else. And once you finally stop, truly stop, you find, truly find your heart's desire. You find what it is that you've been looking for all this time. It's not hidden from you. It's not being denied you. It's just that you're ignoring it. Wow. 10 past, I must have done it. So just to sum up then, we want to create this window of opportunity. That's what this teaching is all about. So that you can look into existence and find out its true nature. And that's what will set you free. The Buddha's teaching is a utility in that sense. It's enabling you to do what you want to do, which is come to understand the way life really is. And it's that that will set you free. And mindfulness of breathing is just an extraordinarily good way of approaching this whole issue.